Chapter 13. The Refuge, an Uncharted Shield World, Strategy Hall, 850 BCE, the Age of Reconciliation. Uzazelas was just waking up, his first thought that today he must contend with the execution of the traitor Krallan, and then attempt to ease any fears among his people, who had come to call themselves Usans. He needed to make sure they remained unified. Suln came into the sleeping chamber, her eyes glinting with alarm.
Usa, Krallan is gone.
What?
He's gotten away.
When? How did this happen?
We are not sure. At some point, as most of us slept. I don't know how he did it.
Summon enduring bias.
Minutes later, Usa and Suln were hurrying up to the storeroom they'd used as a jail cell. Enduring Bias was already hovering by the open door.
This is all quite interesting, but I should inform you.
Usa was staring at a small puddle of blood on the metal deck in the otherwise empty storeroom.
We had the door locked. A guard was stationed outside.
I merely wanted to say... Enduring Bias began again. Suln turned to the flying voice, interrupting.
Can you show us what happened?
Yes.
I have only just now retrieved the relevant data.
This was recorded earlier.
The flying voice angled itself so its lens was focused downward, and it projected a holographic image showing the exterior of the cell seen from near the ceiling. There was a sentry, a Sangheili Usa knew as Quarry, leaning on the cell door, half asleep. When the storage room was selected for a jail, small holes had been drilled in the door to allow sufficient air for prisoners. Quarry had removed his armored helmet and placed it on the floor. Suddenly a thin metal blade, slimmer than a childling's claw nail, thrust through one of the holes and into Quarry's hearing membrane. Quarry shrieked in pain and fury, and they heard Krallan jeering, clacking his mandibles mockingly.
Coward! Shouted Krallan, withdrawing the blade. That is what happens to the dishonorable.
Furious, Quarry did just what Krallan must have hoped he'd do. He turned and unlocked the door, then started in, drawing his burn blade.
I'll punish you for that. They'll find just enough alive to execute.
And then Quarry screamed in agony, staggering backward. The slim blade had been driven into Quarry's right eye, all the way to the hilt. Krallan wrested the sword from the dying sentry, severed his head, and sprinted away.
That fool,
Usa muttered.
Where is he gone?
Suln asked, turning to Enduring Bias.
That is what I've been trying to tell you, Uzazelas.
He has gone to craft launching. He was there for some minutes before I detected it. I cannot watch everything at once, you know. I must access specific visual data before I can...
Craft launching!
Usa burst out. Unconsciously, he drew his burn blade.
Krallan is an engineer.
He could fly one of the smaller vessels. If he chooses the right one, it will almost fly itself. Something floated into the corridor near Usa then and slowed down. It was one of the flying freight movers, really just a shallow open box large enough for a moderate load of material.
Enter the mover, Enduring Bias chirped, and I will transport you there.
Should we not get some aid from the others? Suln asked.
There is no time for that, Usa said, striding to the mover.
Then simply shut down the hangar door for craft launching,
Suln told the AI as she and Usa climbed into the freight mover.
I regret to report that he has sabotaged the hangar controls, Enduring Bias said as they flew along the hall toward the elevator shaft that would take them up to craft launching.
The flying voice soared along right above them.
That means Krallan is trapped there himself, Usa pointed out.
Perhaps not, though I do not seem to have control over it. He has been able to enable an emergency escape failsafe, so the door is controlled only by remote signal from within the vessel.
They were ascending the shaft now with dizzying speed. The mover wobbled with air pressure, and Usa held on to Soon with one hand, the other gripping the rail of the freight mover. Then they slowed and switched to horizontal movement along a gray metal corridor. The freight mover and Enduring Bias passed through an open door and into a control center that overlooked the hangar. The mover slowed, and Usa vaulted out, running to the window. Below he could see three vessels, one of them the small interstellar craft, the Clan's Blade. And it was the blade that was glowing at the control area, as the wall melted away on a signal from the ship.
"He's on the Clan's Blade!" Usa shouted.
"Yes, and I am afraid the hangar is responding to his plasma engine activation. It knows he wishes to leave, and it arranges his exit."
"There has to be a way to stop it," Usa said,
looking around the control room. But none of the equipment here was known to him. There were arcanely glowing three-dimensional symbols slowly revolving over panels of some unknown material. He wouldn't know how to operate the controls here either way. And one of the panels had been smashed, pried open by a burn blade by the look of it.
"Can either of you get this working again?" Usa asked.
"No, not without much study," Soon said. "He was probably just guessing what to sabotage."
"I could do it," said Enduring Bias, "if I had a Hurricock here."
"Can we import one? That would be splendid. We could use the engineer for a good many critical repairs."
"Look, Krallan is already gone," Soon said, gazing through the window.
Usa followed her gaze and saw that the Clan's Blade had glided through the opening and was ascending a ramp to the outer shell.
"Maybe we can get up there and bring him down."
"I do have a short-range energy focuser that can be used for destructive purposes," the flying voice replied. "But it will not reach the vessel, which is already ascending to orbit."
"If he's gone, he's gone," Soon muttered, turning away.
"But
what will he do, Usa?
Will he return to the Covenant?"
"It is not likely, in my opinion," Usa said.
"Krallan is very much oriented to his own survival. The Covenant might execute him simply for allying with us to begin with. He will search for some safe place to hide himself." But Usa wasn't certain of this. Krallan could get the coordinates of the shield world from the Clan's Blade itself. Suppose he tried to barter those coordinates to the Covenant in exchange for his life. What then?
"Perhaps we should attempt to find some other place to take our people to," Soon suggested, her voice heavy with reluctance.
"We might choose to do that," Usa said, turning away from the window. "I will give it thought. However, there is an alternative. Even if the Covenant finds us here, and perhaps in the long run, it might be for the best." The Dreadnought, High Charity, 850 BCE, the Age of Reconciliation.
"Why should we believe a Sangheili, O prophet of inner conviction?"
Excellent Redolence sounded urbanely bored as he asked the question. McKen sensed the Sangheili beside him tensing at this sneering rhetoric.
"I don't understand the question, Excellent Redolence," McKen said, though he in fact understood all too well.
Excellent's large hooded eyes rolled to take in the Sangheili, Vil Kathami and Trok Tunghil, who stood to McKen's right, the three of them appearing in the High Council chamber. The High Council was intended to include a select number of San Shayum and Sangheili, government delegates ordained as part of the writ of union, but for now the only authorities on the glassy, translucent platform were merely the triumvirate of the hierarchs. There were the three of them in their hovering gravity thrones, great cups of circular metal that comfortably gripped the lower half of each San Shayum hierarch, and that also discreetly included, McKen knew, gravity cannons that could annihilate him in an instant if the hierarch chose. The hierarchs were lined up along the platform in their nearly weightless chairs. Behind the triumvirate was a decorative backdrop of glowing violet and blue panels. Each hierarch wore a loose-sleeved robe with similar colors to the panels. Their hands, three fingers and thumb, were poised near the controls of the thrones. On their heads were golden helmets, each headdress closely following the shape of the forehead and displaying a glowing blue hologram in the shape of a halo. From the throne's backing behind the hierarch's collars rose great forking figures of gold that overtopped their heads. On McKen's far left was the prophet of the glorious journey, who was rather slender, with his back hunched, his eyes set widely apart in an almost triangular face. Then came the prophet of unity, middle-aged and sitting up straight in his throne, eyes glittering with intelligence. And in the third gravity throne sat Excellent Redolence. Standing, arms crossed beside the dais, facing McKen, was the Minister of Anticipatory Security, Erno Custo. Erno looked pensive, shifting nervously from foot to foot. His expression was angry, defiant, but his bearing was fearful. The testimony from Vilkathami and McKen had been damning. Trock hadn't been there in the grotto when Erno's agent Vervum had tried to assassinate McKen, but he had seen Vervum tamper with the weaponry on McKen's anti-grav chair. He had supposed Vervum was merely adjusting it, but given the testimony, it did sound as if Vervum had disabled the chair's armaments.
"You do not understand my question," Excellent Redolence said in mock astonishment. "Really?"
McKen glanced at the Sangheili. "Excellent Redolence, with all due respect." He made the hand gesture of respect as well, to re-emphasize he didn't want to offend the hierarchs. It wouldn't help Cressanda to have her husband disintegrated with a gravity cannon. "The Sangheili are our allies in the Covenant. We must trust them, and they in turn must trust us. Trock Tongheel here is a well-respected commander. Ranger Kathami earned my respect. He saved my life."
"You are at least partly right," said the Prophet of Unity. "The Covenant must be based on mutual respect. I'm sure that Excellent Redolence did not intend it quite the way it sounded. The Sangheili are indeed our allies. But let us look at the situation. You were asked by a hierarch to bring back a group of female Sanshayum. This you accomplished. You were asked to bring back the legendary Purifying Vision and its accompanying luminary. You claim you had the luminary, and yet it is lost. How you could lose anything so unspeakably precious passes understanding. Is it any wonder that we ask ourselves if you have muddied the story to avoid blame?"
"I accept all responsibility," said McKen. "I was in charge of the expedition. But you have heard Trock Tongheel say that the word of this young ranger can be trusted, and he testified as to what happened. The Huragok can also be consulted."
"The Huragok!" Excellent Redolence jeered. "Now we are consulting artificial organisms created to fix machines."
"It is true that we cannot admit a Huragok as a witness," said the Prophet of the Glorious Journey blandly, waving a dismissive hand at the notion. "They are almost without volition, too easily influenced, and difficult to communicate with."
Vilkathami stirred and opened his mouth to speak, and McKen thought he was going to argue about the possibility of communicating with floats near ceiling, so he reached over and squeezed the Sangheili's shoulder in warning. Vil clamped his mandibles and merely growled softly to himself. The Prophet of Unity, thoughtfully tugging a wattle, said,
"Huragox aside, we cannot ignore the probability that Vervum, an agent of the Ministry of Anticipatory Security, attempted to assassinate the Prophet of Inner Conviction. And it was that attempt
and its aftermath that delayed us, O High Prophet, said McKen, ceremoniously gesturing to show respect and agreement. Had we not been delayed, I believe we could have safely eluded the Stoics, and had we left without having a battle with the Stoic Pholisteed Patrol, we likely would have left Jonjer Kom in time to avoid the missile attack, which cost us the luminary.
If you had properly stored the luminary in another part of the vessel, said Excellent Redolence, you would have it here now. That is, if you ever had it at all.
McKen clenched his fists. He wanted badly to use his own chair's weaponry on Redolence. Instead, he gestured, so you say.
You have all seen the damage to the ship, said someone behind McKen. He turned to see old Kerlam floating into the room on his gravity chair. The vengeful vitality systems recorded the presence of the luminary.
Kerlam, Excellent Redolence snarled. You are no longer a hierarch, and you have no right to—
Oh, but I do have the right, Kerlam said. Look at the Book of Hierarchs. Review the rules. I am not active. I am retired. But I am still allowed to voice an opinion here when I choose. And my opinion is, this is all a waste of time. McKen has done nothing wrong. He acted heroically. The great journey has blessed him. And the gods of the journey have decreed, quite evidently, that we have not yet earned a luminary that will show us the whereabouts of the halos. But I have just come from viewing the purifying vision. Have you all seen it? That is, the exhibition of images within the device?
We have, said the Prophet of Unity.
Then you would have to be blind not to know what it is telling us, Kerlam said. The loss of the luminary is a judgment upon us from on high. We are not yet worthy. But the purifying vision informs us that we are on the path, and it gives us clues, which one day may lead us to Halo.
I respect Kerlam's theological acumen, said Great Journey. It is long tested and always righteous. Thus I vote that we rule that the Prophet of Inner Conviction is found blameless for the loss of the luminary.
And what of the attempted assassination? Kerlam demanded. I know the story from Inner Conviction's own lips. And who is to blame? The Ministry of Anticipatory Security. Surely a dangerous concept in itself. And that fool Erno.
Kerlam pointed a long, arthritically warped finger at Erno.
Let this absurd new ministry be eliminated, and its minister demoted to a third administrative assistant in sewage treatment. If we cannot prove that he was behind the assassination attempt, we may yet infer it. Let him be sent to the hinterlands of the galaxy, to oversee a mine, and then we may have a modicum of justice.
No, Erno said.
It wasn't.
Silence! Excellent Redolence had turned in his throne and was bellowing at Erno.
One word more and I will push for your execution. Clearly you have let your personal dislike for Inner Conviction blur your ministerial agenda. Go and say no more.
McKen grunted to himself, hearing Excellence's emphatic command to Erno to say no more. Clearly the Hierarch was trying to quiet Erno before the former minister blurted something that implicated his true master. Shaking, Erno gawped up at Excellent, who glared back darkly, his body language silently radiating warning even as his fingers slid toward the controls of his throne's cannon. Erno noticed the motion and turned away. He strode out of the hall, muttering inaudibly.
Perhaps, said Unity, we should all view the purifying vision again.
We should, High Prophet of Unity, said Kerlam. But something else has come up. We may have an indication where Usa Zalus might be.
I have received intelligence that the traitor could well be on an uncharted world, and not just that, one of those formerly inhabited by the Forerunners.
Intriguing and dismaying, cried Excellent Redolence. Heresy! This despicable creature dares to defile the creation of the Forerunners.
He turned and gave McKenna a look that was superficially sympathetic, but that look had levels, deep, dark levels within it.
We shall have to take it back, and I think I know just the San Shayum to restore order to the Covenant. My apologies that you will have to leave High Charity so soon after returning to it.
Chrysanda, McKen said in relief as she came into the front room of their living quarters. She wore a blossom filigreed anti-grav belt over her robe. She rarely used a chair. McKen was standing by his own anti-grav chair, one hand on it, breathing hard. He'd been doing knee bends, holding on to the chair. He was still thinking about how weak he'd felt physically in the gravitational field of the San Shayum homeworld. Chrysanda looked at him wryly.
You have been exercising again.
She took off her wrap and hung it on a peg. She had worn her maternal wrap, not because she was pregnant, there was a special shawl for that, but because as a wedded San Shayum female guiding young, unmarried females, she had a proper appearance to keep up. She'd been assigned to help the young, would-be brides from Jonjur Kom in adjusting to their new life on High Charity. McKen slipped into his chair and puffed out his cheeks.
Enough for today. How are the new females, Lilumna and the others? They've resigned themselves to staying and marrying here.
Resigned themselves sounds less than enthusiastic.
There is a certain homesickness, but they're also excited and quite bedazzled by this place.
Have they met anyone?
They've only been here a handful of days, my darling.
She came to stand near him, putting her arm around his neck.
Of course, they have possible suitors, but have only seen them on the promenade, that kind of thing.
They were a bit appalled by the physical aspect of some of our males. I take it the Jonjur Kom males are rather burlier and straighter in posture.
But they enjoy the courtesy, the gentleness of the males they've met. I think it will be all right.
If Excellent has his way, some laboratory form of procreation might be considered.
His ideas are always in repugnantly bad taste.
Yes, I find his latest one regarding me to be especially in bad taste.
Are they really going to make you lead that expedition? You've only been back so short a time. You nearly got killed twice on the last one, and that was the homeworld.
Oddly enough, the homeworld is one of the most dangerous places I've ever visited. But yes, it has just been confirmed. Excellent has convinced the other hierarchs I am to be the prophet in charge of the expedition, because, as he says, I allowed Usa Zelas to get away long ago. And now I must atone. He is hoping I'll get killed out there. He knows, I suspect, he was behind Vervum's attempt to assassinate me. That is, he was behind Erno's little plot. One puppeteer puppeteering another.
Yes, Chrysanda.
He sighed.
You see, a certain Sangheili, one Salus Krillon, has been captured in a vessel associated with Usa Zelas. He is gallantly offered to show us where this mysterious Forerunner world lies. Not that we need his help. The information is in that vessel's records. But Krillon may be useful yet.
You are going to this place?
I am. When we assemble the fleet. Very soon. With a sizable force. And I am going to have to confront Usa Zelas once more.